Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I'm joined by guests for a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting. So in this episode, I am joined by Jordan Pulaski of Comic Blitz. Comic Blitz is a digital comics service, and I'm very much into the print medium, so I'm something of a neophyte on terms of the digital stuff. So Jordan, why don't you start by telling us what Comic Blitz is, why it's a great service, why we should all check it out.
Absolutely. Well, first, John, thank you for having me on the show. Hello, everybody who's listening. Comic Blitz is essentially like the Netflix of digital comics. And I know you've all heard that claim before from other companies who recently released subscription services. However, everything that's on board our platform, you get as a reader, you have access to. There's no restrictions, no limitations, all for one low monthly price. By the time this episode comes out, we will have announced new pricing. So it used to be $9.99 a month. If you're listening to this right now, you would get unlimited comics for $7.99. That's for the price of two new comics a month. You have access to over 4,500 comics and graphic novels for just $7.99. And if going unlimited isn't your thing, we have a lower price tier as well, $3.99 for 10 comics a month. So instead of buying one print comic for $3.99, you can read 10 comics on Comic Blitz. As if that wasn't enough, if you want to just give the app a whirl, check it out, see what we have, read some stuff, check out the interface if you'd like. We also have some free content for you to just come on board, check out, and see if this is for you.
That's cool. So, I mean, that's a great pricing structure.
Well, thanks. I mean, we don't want value to be a reason that people don't come on board. I mean, we think that we have some great content, a great user experience, and if you love reading comics, I mean, we have some great stuff like The Boys is one of my all-time favorite comics. We have that. We have all the ancillary titles to it as well. From Dynamite Comics is one of the publishers that's on board with us. We also have Valiant Comics, Action Lab, Zenoscope, Aspen, some stuff from Top Cow. We're going to be getting some more content from them as well. And as of this listening, if you will, we will have just announced that we have IDW on the platform as well.
Now, is that all of IDW or just a subset?
It's a selection of content from IDW, and it's a good thing for them. It's a good thing for us in order for them to see if this is a viable platform for them and for us not to get in a little too over our head and overextend ourselves with their content and their licenses. So this is a great starting point for both companies to kind of come in and see if this is something that's going to be good for each of us.
That's cool. When I was going through the website the other day, I was really blown away by just how much you had on there for both Dynamite and Valiant. It looked to be a fairly impressive selection. Now, I know with the Marvel Digital Comics Unlimited, it's like a six-month behind sort of a thing.
Right.
Is Comic Blitz up to date? Has it got a time delay? How does that kind of work out?
Yeah, so probably any subscription service that you're looking at is going to have some sort of time delay. Otherwise, we're essentially cannibalizing the market. There wouldn't be an aftermarket, right? Mm-hmm. So what we do is we wait anywhere from 1 to 6 months after initial release, and that depends on the deals that we have with each publisher. So I can't get into specifics about who's what, but if you take a look on our platform versus what's out on the market today, you could maybe figure it out. But yeah, so we have a little bit of a delay. But for the most part, we're pretty up to speed with just about everything on the platform.
Now, you'd mentioned concern about cannibalizing the print sales. Is the delay out of that concern or just something that the publishers... I mean, what is your stand on the concern about potentially cannibalizing print sales?
Yeah, well, so number one, I love comics. I want there to be a market. I don't want to put out a product in the market that's going to hurt the market. I want to help grow the market. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing about a subscription service is it makes it easier for people to discover new content. And what I mean by that is, I mean, John, I don't know what your buying habits are or what you prefer to read, but you spend your money specifically, most likely like most people do, on the same comics every month, right? Whether it's Spider-Man, Batman, maybe, you know, $4 for an Image comic or $4 for another indie comic or something like that. But for the most part, you probably have your spending habits as a creature of habit, if you will.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you're most likely you're not going to risk spending $4 on something that you're like, oh, I heard that was good, but I don't know. So Comic Blitz is a great way to discover that content that like you may have heard about but didn't buy the first time around, because it's already included in your subscription. There's no financial risk to you as a customer to read it. Whereas if you're buying individual digital comics that are at the same price as print comics, it makes it difficult to justify a $4 purchase perhaps for something that you're not sure, you know, that you're going to like.
No, absolutely. And one of the things I was noticing as I was going through which publishers and which titles you had was there were a couple that I hadn't read that it's like, you know, I've been thinking about that. But again, to your point of I'd have to spend the money on each issue and I just haven't pulled the trigger on that yet. Postal was one of those. I noticed you had the first volume of Red Team. That was one that I actually have pulled the trigger on and got the back issues of before I'd realized you have it all on there. So I can definitely see where having this kind of subscription model, particularly at the price points you've got, it just seems like it's a great deal.
It makes a lot of sense for us as a platform, and it makes a lot of sense for publishers. I mean, look, you're a numbers guy, so you know that the majority of all sales happen the first month a comic is out.
Mm-hmm.
Because after that, there's the next month's comics, and everyone's competing. Whether you're out a month, 2 months, 3 months, you're all competing with the latest arrivals from every major publisher. So this is a great way for publishers to monetize their back catalogs where there really isn't a place for them to do that. I mean, yes, digital comics are all available elsewhere, but at the same time, you have to, again, spend money on an individual comic versus, you know, for the price of two comics, have access to all these comics and check it out that way. What we want to do, and we're working on right now, and we're still a young company, but we're working on sort of not transferring, but pointing people in the direction of buying print, because we want people to come to Comic Blitz, love what they read, and then they want to go buy the trade paperback. They want to go buy the hardcover. They want to buy a toy or a statue or a hat or a t-shirt. And all these things are, it's just extra money for publishers. It's found money, essentially, that doesn't exist right now.
So. It almost sounds like you're trying to take the place of the old spinner rack.
In a way, yes. Yeah. So digital, what became the spinner rack, right? Mm-hmm. Like Comixology and digital comics brought the convenience and the size of the library to the reader, right? So now you don't have to leave your home. If you're not in a major metropolitan area with a comic store, you still have access to comics. And what the subscription service does is it takes it that much further. It makes it so that you as a reader have access to all this content. You could check it all out for an extremely affordable price. And what it does is it benefits the publishers, because the publisher's biggest pain point is they're all looking for new readers, new fans, new customers. And this is a great discovery engine for customers. This is a great way for publishers to actually gain those new fans, people to discover their work for the first time and then get turned into someone who's now buying trades, who's now buying the individual issues when they come out. Because they love the writer, they love the artist, they love the character, the title, whatever it is, they've discovered something new and now they've become a fan of that. And now the publishers, they make money off the royalties that we provide. And now they have I'm not going to say every person, but if they get, let's say, one out of every eight, one out of every 10 people turns into a new fan of, say, Valiant or Dynamite and goes on to buy James Bond or Bloodshot or whatever, then that's a win. That's a new fan, a new reader, a new customer.
No, absolutely. Anyone that gets hooked on the stuff through this, like you said, is definitely a win. And I know a lot of people in, you know, my circle of friends and coworkers and whatnot that, I mean, they're never going to set foot in a comic book store because that's out of their way. They've got other things to be doing. But I do know a number of them have, like, the digital Comics Unlimited stuff from Marvel and whatnot, mm-hmm. and have been interested in something that has some other publishers.
Yeah, so that's the differentiator between us and Marvel. I mean, Marvel, granted, is the largest publisher in comics, has, you know, a 35-40% mm-hmm. Market share, or you know, I mean, the last few months DC's been in that position, but so it makes sense for them to have their own platform, absolutely. But if you ever, you know, are looking to branch out from Marvel, then this is an alternative. We have multiple, we have 25 publishers on board, you know? I mean, Marvel is one publisher and they have a lot of great stuff, but we have a very diverse roster, a very diverse library for things a little bit off the beaten path. We have your superhero stuff as well. So there's a great selection here and it's always growing.
Well, and what I was noticing is you've got kind of what I would consider the the minor league publishers using kind of a rough baseball analogy. You've got DC and Marvel. They're the major leagues.
Sure.
They're playing at a whole nother level than just about everybody else. But again, you've got Valiant, you've got Dynamite, you just mentioned IDW coming on board. You've got some of the stuff from Image. It looked like it was the Matt Hawkins titles, I think it was.
The Top Cow stuff,
yeah. Action Labs, Chapter House Publishing, I've been reading some of their stuff and liking it. Blue Juice, Aspen. So you've got a lot of that kind of middle group of publishers.
Sure.
That I think would be the bulk of what a lot of people would be reading that's not Marvel and DC.
Yeah, I mean, so, look, IDW is a huge get for us, right? Mm-hmm. They're the number four publisher in market share. But the some of the titles that they have, Transformers, G.I. Joe, My Little Pony, Star Trek, I mean, these are all really recognizable titles to people who aren't necessarily into comics, you know? So those are great. Great gateway comics for some people. And those are the kind of comics that, like, even if you're a comic fan, if you're like a strictly a Marvel fan or strictly a DC fan, you know Transformers. And if you don't have to go out and spend $4 an issue, like, come here and check it out. It's great stuff. And you're not going to, like, lose anything. Because if you don't like Transformers, that's fine. We have thousands of other comics for you to check out for the same price as one or two comics. But yeah, so, I mean, we have three top 10 publishers. Top Cow is an imprint of another top 10 publisher. We're in talks with just about every major publisher that there is. So, I mean, it's interesting, John. I mean, like, people take Netflix for granted nowadays, right? Everyone just assumes Netflix has everything. But when they started, it wasn't that easy. And that's sort of the position that we're in now. We're still in our infancy. We're still growing. We're still in negotiations with publishers to add more content to the platform. And eventually, yeah, the goal is to have publishers 3 through 20, and then, of course, you know, to go after Marvel and DC and have everything on board the platform and really be that catch-all Netflix of digital comics and so much more, in all honesty. Like, we want to make the site more than just about coming and reading comics. I'll leave it at that because it would be giving away too much, but comics would just be what brings you here. We have other things that we want to introduce that'll keep you here.
Interesting. Okay, cool. Yeah, it just seems like, when people hear, again, that Netflix for comics and stuff, they assume a certain thing that, frankly, isn't even true about Netflix. Again, like you said, it having everything, because stuff's coming and going from Netflix all the time.
Of course.
I'm assuming that you're going to try to keep all these publishers for as long as inhumanly possible on this stuff, because I imagine there's a certain just cost of doing business to the negotiations and whatnot, and I'm sure that would be influencing where you spend your time in terms of what publishers you get added and stuff like that. I mean, as great as Terry Moore is, I can see going after, you know, his publisher. Okay, that gets you one title.
Exactly.
Whereas, you know, there are others that, boom, you've suddenly got, you know, 15 or something you get added.
That's, I mean, yes, you are correct. I mean, we know that there's plenty of individual creators out there that want to have their books published or want to have a distribution channel, you know, so that they could point people in a way and say, hey, look at, you know, go here because this is what I wrote and or drew and you should check it out. And yeah, there are smaller publishers, there are larger publishers. And we have enough of a library right now, I think, that we have the luxury. We don't have many luxuries in the position that we're in, but we do have the luxury of not having to chase every single publisher for their content right now. And we can focus a little bit more on some of those larger publishers that people are really interested in and really want to see on a platform like this. And that is what we're doing at the moment.
Yeah, because I've seen, you know, some other stuff over the years where it's like, oh, yeah, we're dealing with all these publishers. And they show me the list and I'm like, I recognize maybe some of the publishers, but I'm not reading anything from any of them or whatever.
You right. Know,
I went through my reading list compared to what you've got and was pretty impressed by the crossover. You know, it wasn't, again, 100%. I wouldn't expect it to be. But you've got, again, the Dynamite, Valiant, and stuff like that.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's a long road. This took a lot of work to do, and I'm very familiar with many other startups and other companies in this space that have tried to do what we're doing. And fortunately for us, it seems that we've kind of made it the farthest along versus, I mean, you know, obviously Comixology has Amazon behind them. That's a whole different ballgame. Mm-hmm. But as far as building from the ground up, like sort of a grassroots kind of thing, this I believe we've actually made it farther than anyone else. And quite frankly, I think we made it farther than anyone thought we would, which is a good feeling. So we've definitely proven a lot of people wrong just by getting as far as we've gotten so far.
What do you attribute that success to?
Just not giving up and grit. And I mean, it's look, in business, it's there's a lot of times. I mean, I've been working on this for 2.5 years now, and there are a lot of things that have happened multiple times that I could see people quitting and just mm-hmm. shutting their doors over. And it's never a straight path. It's always 2 steps forward, 1 step back. And it's really just about how you handle those challenges and overcome them and keep pressing forward, whether it's content, whether it's users, whether it's keeping the doors open. I mean, whether it's team members coming and going. I mean, we've seen it all. And I think it's just about persevering and getting through all that in order to make the stamp that you want to make.
No, it makes sense. You got to have a vision. You got to have the will to see it through.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, I believe this is an awesome thing. I really think that anyone who likes comics, even if you're like not a digital person, look, the biggest pain point for digital, John, you probably know the answer to this, but it's the price.
Mm-hmm.
To pay $3 for a digital file, I mean, it's really like an outdated model. Nobody buys iTunes songs anymore. Nobody buys, like, you know, one movie in a digital format. You have all these streaming services. This is the model that consumers have grown to sort of grasp and hold on to, and this is what the market demands right now. And every other medium has this subscription model, really, except for comics. You know, there have been those that have tried, and Comixology is doing somewhat of a subscription service, but it's not that unlimited, all-you-can-eat type thing that really it's proven at this point. I mean, consumers demand that, and that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, no, I totally see where you're coming from on that. I think one thing, though, that sets the comic book medium and market apart from movies, music, and things like that is the whole aspect of collectability. And that seems like something that doesn't really translate to digital.
Yes, but it doesn't translate to digital in terms of collectability. But what it does, like we mentioned before, this is the new spinner rack. This is the new way people discover new content. And then they go on and they buy, you know, a back issue of something because it's a first appearance. Or they go on and they buy an omnibus and spend $100 on a nice hardcover or something like that. So there's other avenues. It's not that we're trying to replace print, I think, is sort of the difference. I don't know what Comixology's mission was, you know, if they were trying to replace print or not, but that's not our mission. We want everyone. Essentially, what a product like this does is it democratizes comics. John, comics, as you probably well know, is the worst entertainment value for your dollar.
I would agree with that, unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's an expensive hobby. You know, if you spend $4 on a comic that you read in anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes, the breakdown of that is less than your cable bill, or I'm sorry, like more per minute than your cable bill, than Netflix, than a sporting event, than a concert, than going to a movie, all of those things. Comics is the most expensive per minute entertainment. If I'm not even saying that right, but you understand what I'm saying.
But yeah, so, the return on the investment, you're making a big investment for a few moments of entertainment.
Exactly. I mean, sure, there's people who go back and read their comics multiple times to read the different layers and really get the artwork. But I mean, I have a kid. I read my comics like on the toilet as fast as I can, and that's it. I mean, so something like this really, it opens it up to a lot more people who might be interested in comics but aren't willing to spend, you know, anywhere from like 20 to 100, 200 bucks a month on comics.
Or simply don't have a comic store near them or the wherewithal to go find one near them.
Exactly. Or, I mean, look, you had mentioned this earlier, but I mean, women are reading digital comics. And one of the reasons probably is so they don't have to go into a comic store and deal with a stereotypical comic book guy, you know, potentially not treating them well or gawking at them or whatever happens. I mean, so this brings comics to an entirely new demographic and segment. It's pretty amazing.
No, I agree with that. The other thing I think it changes fundamentally is it seems to me, and maybe you can give me some insight on this, to turn comics into somewhat of a meritocracy. Because right now, I would have to either go to a store, you know, I get my comics mail order, but go to a store, pick up a comic, say, okay, I'm going to sample this, go home, read it. But then to get that next issue, I got to go back to the store.
Sure.
So that's at least next day or probably next week or whatever. And that throttles how much I'm going to read or how excited I am or do I even remember if I liked it or whatnot the next week. But with digital, the minute I'm done, I could start the next one. Now, with a subscription model, you've even taken the price out of the equation on that.
I'm just going to let you talk. You're selling it great.
Well, I know Netflix did a study for what they considered the, I forget how they phrased it, but the how far into a series somebody had to get at to the point where like 70 or whatever percent made it to the end of the season.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Kind of what was the turning point moment for like a House of Cards or a Daredevil or, you know, whatever show.
I think I remember. Yeah, I think I remember that. And it was a really high number, actually, I think.
It was, but it was also kind of a slightly circular argument. It's like everybody who finished it made it this far, but that they're defining success as everyone who finished it was. On the one hand, it kind of makes sense. On the other hand, it kind of made my brain hurt a little bit. And this is me who's a number cruncher or whatever.
Sure.
I'm just wondering if there's something similar that over time you could get with Comic Blitz as to if somebody goes one issue, two issues, five issues, whatever,
mm-hmm.
that if they make it that far, they'll make it the rest of the way. Because you've taken the money thing out of the equation. The convenience is there. Now it's just based on content.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you know, unlike TV shows, I would think, or like a season in a TV show, I mean, if you have a long-running series, I mean, creative teams can change, writers can change, artists can change. So there's a lot of other factors potentially in comics that would make someone drop off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be a new story arc. Like if one story arc wraps up, and that could be a jumping off point for someone. They felt that they got what they wanted out of it and didn't need to go any further. So I'm just saying, I mean, yes, we could, you know, as a tech company, we can actually see, you know, how many issues of a series people read. Mm-hmm. And we can see if people are reading all the way through or dropping off at a certain point. There's a lot of cool stuff that you can do with the data that we collect that isn't available in print comics. I mean, like one of the questions I get from a lot of people is how many people read comics? And you'd be a perfect person to potentially answer that, although I don't think that there is a set answer. I could tell you the size of the market in terms of dollars, but I can't tell you how many people comprise that.
Exactly. We know how much is spent. We know roughly the number of issues and such, or units that are moving. But we don't know if it's one person buying, you know, 200 comics a month or 200 people buying one comic a month.
Exactly.
But you've got all of that information. And just the whole concept of seeing if there's a trend of, you know, people got all the way to like page 15 in a given book and then whoop, they're out at that point. You know, was there something that just threw them out of the story or whatever? It just seems like from a data mining perspective, there's a lot you could do. Have you had any interest from any of the publishers along those lines in terms of, I know way back in the day when Peter David, I think when he was writing The Hulk, mm-hmm. he was still in the sales department or at least tangentially involved or still he was from there. So he knew the people.
Sure. And
he was keeping an eye on how the sales of the book were doing. It started to dip. He would change directions. You know, he would adapt as the market dictated.
And did it help?
He ran. He was on that book for better part of 10 years, I think.
Okay.
So I'm going to say, yeah.
Yeah.
It may not have been the top seller or whatever, but he kept it viable to the point that he was never replaced up until, again, either he chose to leave or whatever happened there at the end.
Sure, sure. Well, with us, there's a lot of data that we capture. Right now, we give some of that data to publishers. Just because we capture it doesn't mean that we could actually sort of, I guess the word is like place it all in a report that makes sense.
No, so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like we have it all. And we can show any publisher anything that they want to know about these customers, minus, you know, names and email addresses, essentially. So people can, you know, they keep their anonymity. We're not selling that information. We're not giving that information to third parties. But there's a lot in terms of which books are being read, you know, like you said, which pages are being read. I mean, there's all that stuff that we could drill down. Location. I mean, we have people in 74 countries that are users of the platform, which is mind-boggling to me. It's awesome. But we could tell you where your books are being read and say like, hey, Australia seems to be a really good market for you guys. Maybe do a convention down there or something. I mean, there's a lot of good information for these publishers that maybe they didn't know, you know, about the popularity of certain characters or titles or issues or whatever, and maybe build something off of that, you know, create more content surrounding the things that we now have this data that we can share and show you, like, hey guys, use this and it's only going to benefit you.
Yeah, it does seem like there's a lot of data-driven decisions you could make. The whole concept of picking which conventions you support based on where your readers are is one I hadn't even thought about.
Yeah, completely. I mean, even you could do that domestically as well.
Yeah, yeah. So right now, it is Comic Blitz is available on which platforms again?
So currently, we're on iOS devices, which is iPhones and iPads. We also have a mobile responsive web reader. What that means is you could read comics on your laptop and desktop. You could see the full catalog. And also, if you have an Android or a Windows device, you could also access us through the web browser. We don't have a native Android or Windows app just yet, but those are things that will be coming shortly.
Okay, I was using the web browser one on my desktop and found it, you know, worked great and stuff. I was able to navigate, read through a comic and stuff, no problem.
Great, awesome, good to hear. Go tech team.
Yeah. Well, I've got to imagine this took a while to put together because you've got to not only have the software in place to do the reading of it, but to catalog the stuff. And again, just getting comics into any sort of a sensible database is something on the sales side I've played with for over a decade or two now. And it's just with the crazy numbering and stuff, it drives me crazy.
So my co-founder is my CTO, and he is... I mean, he's someone who's been coding, you know, for 20 years. He's someone who, I mean, he built the entire back end. Everything that you just described, he's responsible for, not me. I have no knowledge of how to do any of that stuff. I mean, I've learned as we've been building this thing. But yeah, I mean, the back end is, you know, for this might get a little technical, but it's robust and scalable, meaning, I mean, it's really capable of doing anything that we could imagine, even in the future. So we're in a really good position for growth. We'll never have to worry about the site crashing or the app crashing. I mean, crashes happen, bugs happen, but I just mean like the amount of traffic coming will never be so much that we can't handle. But yeah, I mean, everything is really built in a top-notch manner. I mean, my CTO has worked for several companies, most recently Live Nation. He was working there, and now he's, you know, a full partner in Comic Blitz as our CTO. So, yeah, quite a pedigree on the tech side of things. And, yeah, I mean, the rest of the team is awesome, too.
Well, and the scalability, I think, I'm glad you pointed that out, because that's a big deal. I remember, I think it was 3, maybe 4 years ago, when during Comic-Con, Comixology did some kind of promotion where there was a bunch of like 70 Marvel comics for free or something.
Yeah, I want to say that was a South by Southwest event, but yes.
I think you're right. I think you're right, which is funny because I'm here in Austin, Texas. I should know that. But it was a big enough deal that it actually took their site down and regular subscribers couldn't get to the comics they'd bought. Or regular customers, or not subscribers, but yeah. So having the scalability is a big deal.
I do remember that. And yeah, we could talk more about that off air.
No, this is cool. I'm glad to hear you're getting IDW on board. I'm looking forward to that. Again, I went through the list of comics I've got. I'm obviously big into Marvel and DC. I took those aside. And you had a very impressive selection of titles I was interested in and familiar with. And a couple that, again, I hadn't pulled the trigger on, but may use this to go read. So I do think it's something that facilitates the casual comic book reader or the sampling, in addition to people using it if they want to, as their main source for some of these publishers. I think you've got a really interesting product here.
Well, thank you very much for that. And yeah, I mean, like I said, I think we've delivered more than like any other company in this space to date. And yeah, it's only going to continue to grow, in all honesty. Mm-hmm. It's only going to get bigger and bigger, more top-tier publishers coming on board, hopefully very soon. Nothing on that just yet to announce, but more in the works, absolutely.
And then you were saying that by the time this episode airs, the unlimited monthly pricing is $7.99?
It's $7.99 for unlimited all-you-can-read comics.
And then the $3.99 a month is for 10 comics a month?
For 10 comics a month, yeah. So for the price of one comic, you get 10 comics, which is essentially two trades, and maybe you get to sample a couple other things too.
Yeah, that just seems like very good pricing and very competitive in this market, because I do think one of the main things that pushes people off titles is they've only got so much they can spend on this. And you're definitely tackling that. Of course, the other problem I hear and that I'm currently experiencing is not having enough time to read all of this.
True. That's true, too. But still, you could either spend your $8 on two comics, or if you spend it here and you only read 5 or 10 comics, you still got your money's worth and then some. So even if you don't have enough time, you'll still be saving money or, you know, getting the value out of the product that you would hope to get.
Absolutely.
And we have a little bit of time if you want to talk numbers and like you were saying about the market.
I would love to talk numbers.
Sure.
What numbers are you willing to give in terms of how many subscribers you've got, things of that nature? What's the average readership? I mean, is there any of that you're willing to share?
Probably not about our numbers. I thought we were going to talk about like the industry numbers as a whole or something like that.
Yeah. Along those, the one question I've got then is you had mentioned price point and how that's a showstopper sometimes for digital comic sales. But mm-hmm. I know through the comic store I deal with, Discount Comic Service, or DCBS.
DCBS, sure.
Yeah. I can actually get my print comics cheaper than I can get them on Comixology. So there's a price parity that kind of has to be there in the market so digital doesn't, you know, completely cave the print market, which is the dominant revenue stream, paying for the content creation. How do you see that playing out, you know, in the future? Because we've seen a number of years of digital reading kind of going up. From what I was hearing from ICV2, and this is dated information, you may have more accurate, more timely information, it had kind of plateaued last year. Is digital growing, is it going to become the dominant revenue stream?
So I don't think it's going to become the dominant revenue stream, but I do think that despite the reports on ICV2 that it is still growing. Just like the print comics and graphic novels, those are all estimates, mm-hmm. right? I mean, people look at that and they take it as the Bible, but realistically, those are issues shipped, not sold to the final customer, right?
So absolutely, yeah.
They're estimates. We're not taking into account returnability. And I mean, there's a lot of things that tweak the numbers one way or another, right? So that those are not definitive numbers. And the same can be said for digital comics. I believe, and I don't necessarily, this isn't taken for fact. I mean, this is just my thought, that they must be just going off of Comixology numbers for the digital side of things. And I don't even know if Comixology is giving up their information to ICV2 or not. Like, I don't know how that's happening, but my assumption is they're basing the entire digital comic market solely on Comixology, when that's really not the case anymore, because you have Humble Bundle that's not factored into those reports. You have Marvel Unlimited that's not factored into those reports. If anyone is buying their comics not through Comixology, so that would be like on Marvel, on DC, perhaps even Madefire could be making a sale or two here or there. Drive Through Comics, Comics Plus. There's all these different ways that people can get their digital comics nowadays that I don't think is being accounted for in that reporting. So even if Comixology lost, you know, 10% of their sales because they removed in-app purchasing from iOS devices, that's not indicative of the entire market. So in 2014, digital was at $100 million. 2015, digital was at $90 million, mm-hmm. right? And I don't believe that that's a plateauing of the medium. I don't believe it's a plateauing of the platform. I think that it was just the reporting of one company, and then they just extrapolated the rest of the information off of that one company's performance.
That makes sense. I could also be it potentially a plateauing of what people are willing to spend digitally, which means a subscription service is going to become more and more of a factor going over time.
Well, one of the interesting things I heard, and this is a great podcast to actually talk about this on, is Comixology has been out for 5-6 years now. Seven years.
Sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, so that initial wave of people going back and purchasing all those back issues, you know, of the current readers of comics, that wave has sort of ended, right? Everyone who was here from the advent of digital comics till today has probably bought just about all the back issues that they want to buy.
Unless new ones are getting into the system, yeah.
Right. But that's incremental, right? I mean, those, you're talking about like a little bit here or there. That's not going to move the needle in the way an entire back catalog. So there is something to be said about that potentially being a part of the plateau.
No, that makes sense, yeah.
But again, still not taking into consideration all those other digital formats.
Well, you know, I've seen like the Humble Bundle ones, but until you'd mentioned it, I wouldn't have even thought to necessarily consider that sort of a number crunching.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, that's sales of digital comics. That's, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars for each Humble Bundle that goes up.
Absolutely. And the pricing structure on those, I mean, I was seeing one a little while ago for, I think it was the Star Trek stuff, predominantly through IDW, but had some of the Gold Key and other stuff. And man, the price point on that, it's like, you know, I almost pulled the trigger on that, even though I've got most of them, not the Gold Key and the older stuff, but most of the rest in print.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, just for easy access to have it on your device and not have to go digging through, you know, long boxes for them, it makes sense for such a minimal fee. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's Humble Bundle, and then there's another one, Groupies, I think it is. I mean, so there are these other places that people can purchase digital comics that, again, I just don't think, I'm not saying this really from anything other than an educated assumption. I don't know this for a fact. I'm not trying to, you know, make a claim. But yeah, I mean, realistically, those companies are not being reported on. So, you know, Scribd is another one, right? I don't necessarily know that they're, you know, doing gangbusters over there, but there is money being, you know, spent or made on digital comics.
Yeah, my gut feeling is that, again, with the price point of print comics, the digital comics being there or thereabouts in terms of the cost, it's hard for a lot of the people I socialize with to justify that cost. Whereas, you know, I know a number of them have that Marvel Digital Unlimited subscription. I'm going to be mentioning Comic Blitz to them, of course.
Well, thank you.
Just because, again, for a nominal fee, you can dive in as deep or as shallow as you want to on the reading without feeling like you're breaking the bank. So I think it's part of the appeal.
It's absolutely part of the appeal.
Well, and in this day and age where the properties are so widely known outside of comics because of the movies, the television shows, the video games, etc., there's not any sort of a stigma against comics anymore, as far as I can tell. So getting more people into the hobby and whatnot just seems like a good plan.
Yeah, agreed. It used to not be cool to be a geek. Now everyone wants to be a geek. You know, it's what's going on with cosplay and conventions and everything like that. I mean, when I was a kid, I had two friends that I read and traded comics with, you know, and now thanks to the internet, I have lots of friends like that. I can talk all the time about comics. So it's a good time to be a geek. It's a good time to get into comics.
I think it's a great time for that. And I think as each of these TV shows and movies come out, there's a lot of interest in the source material. What was the real origin in the comics of the Winter Soldier, the older Green Arrow or Flash stuff, things like that. And, you know, again, all the with a new Star Trek series coming up and the comics based on that, there's just, again, such crossover there that, again, wonderful time to be a geek. I'm loving it. I'm having problems consuming all of this media.
Yeah, same.
But hey, that's the kind of problem I'd like to have.
I mean, look, I'm looking forward to the Valiant universe kind of taking off. They're doing this web series now with Ninjak, and they have movie plans. So to me, I mean, and that's some of the, like, if you're not reading Valiant, that's some of the best written stuff that's out on the market right now, hands down. Like, I can't vouch for that content enough. And it's amazing. We have a ton of it on Comic Blitz. The guys who created it all are amazing. And you could start reading it here before you see it on the screen so that you have a reverse problem. Like, I'm watching Luke Cage on Netflix, and I went back on Marvel Unlimited and started reading Luke Cage number one from 1972 or four or whatever it was, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is cool. It matches up.
Well, and just making all that older material available to casual and hardcore fans, because tracking down some of those back issues in print is just harder and harder to do.
So. Totally. Yeah. Because everyone's mama threw them out.
Yeah, I know. Mine didn't. I appreciate that. But most people's did, yeah.
Totally.
So anything else you want to tell the listeners about Comic Blitz?
Check us out, comicblitz.com. We're on facebook.com/comicblitz. We're on Twitter at Comic Blitz app. We're on Instagram at Comic Blitz. Sign up for us on iOS. If you want to check out the free stuff, you just need an email and a password. Everything else, we hope you find to your liking for the money that you're spending. We're always looking for feedback and happy to scratch your back if you're willing to just shoot us some information about what you like and don't like about the app.
Cool.
And one last thing. If you like what you see, if you like what you read, and you want to tell people about it, we will reward you. We will give you a promo code so that you could tell other friends and family, hey, use my code to sign up for Comic Blitz. You get some free stuff, I'll get some free stuff. And it's win-win for everybody.
Well, that's awesome. That's kind of a refer a friend program. That's a smart move.
It's exactly a refer a friend program.
Well, and comics are a social thing. If you're reading something, you like it, you want to tell something about it, and they're going to want to read it. And smart move. Great. Yeah.
Thank you, man. Yeah. And yeah, just check us out. If you like us, give us a nice rating in the App Store. That helps too. And yeah, John, thank you for having me on, and happy to talk comics with anybody, anywhere, anytime.
Cool. Well, thanks for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.